thank you all for attending. Thank you for participating. First of all, welcome Dr. Anne Rainville, Dr. Robert Surmont, Professor Louise Knight, Professor Charles Wessner. Welcome for spending the time to share your knowledge and insights with us all. And special welcome for Regina, Odile, Marius, Tijmen, students who studied innovation procurement in the Netherlands. Great that you're here and to share your insights. And a special welcome for all civil servants, academia from the Netherlands, but also from around Europe for this virtual Science Day on innovation procurement that we have today. So societal challenges that you currently face, such as climate change, resource scarcity, digitalization, security, all require innovation. And the public sector plays a major role in developing and deploying innovations for these challenges. And the public sector can support these innovations with grants and subsidies that can be steered towards specific goals, but that is not why we are here together today. We are together today for the purchasing power that the public sector has. Purchasing power that is spent for the delivery of high quality, sustainable public services. And these societal challenges that we currently face also require these public services to adapt. And we need innovations to make that adaption easier, smoothly, more quickly. And innovative businesses, knowledge institutes, we need them to deliver these innovations. And with the use of innovation procurements, we know how to embrace this innovative power and how to overcome the challenges that we face. And I think there's an important message today is learning how to overcome these obstacles, how to stimulate as a public sector to do that, how to work correctly with the businesses and knowledge institutes together. In the latest letter to Parliament, they sent this Monday, the Dutch government endorses again the importance of innovation procurement. In this letter, the government also mentioned a working group on innovation procurement. And we see as Piano, the Science Day is highly supportive and part of this working group and learn from science, learn what's working, what's not working, to make better policies, but also to better implement the policies in the public sector. Academia, we see them really as a great tool in that. And I hope and expect that today we get valuable insights for all contracting authorities and especially the working group members on innovation procurement. And we thank the academia that want to spend their time to share their knowledge there. Much. We are very grateful for your time. I wish you all a very inspiring science afternoon and a fresh view on innovation procurement and a pleasurable afternoon, especially. Thank you all.
Well, thank you, Floris. Nice words. I held still for 3 seconds, noticing that you're this is your last words for Piano, maybe, out in public. So I want to go to Anne Rainville now. Anne is assistant prof at Utrecht University and an active member of the working group Innovation Procurement. And I want to give you the floor. So you're going to share your screen now.
Okay, I can see you. You can see my screen, right? Correctly? Okay, great. So thank you, and I'm going to get right going into this. I think I might still have about 35 minutes. Maybe I'll try to condense it a bit, but I'm covering a lot of material. So I want to talk today about green public procurement in Europe. So I know we're talking about innovation procurement, but what's also interesting is using public procurement mechanisms to promote sustainability. And this is going to cover a recent study we did across Europe on the progress of green public procurement, or GPP, and some instruments that you can use to facilitate it, also within the context of innovation procurement. So I want to have you go to Menti, please. So you can use your phone and take a picture of the QR code, or you can type in menti.com on your browser, and you can enter the code there. So the code is 8095-4738. Great, and I think a couple of people are here already. So just as a warmer, because we're talking about how to build collaborations and how to work across disciplines and across organizations and sectors, I first want to know where you are in the world. So can you take your pin and drop it on where you are, please? And I think there might be some international too, so I left the whole world to the side. Okay, so there's a lot in Utrecht, a few in the Hague region, one in Groningen, someone in a Dutch island maybe, that's this one. Okay. Yeah, North Holland. Somewhere else in Europe, very good. Okay, so this is actually quite a nice distribution around the Netherlands. Now I'll have a few more interactive components in this presentation. So you can keep this browser, the screen open on your phone, and we can go back to it in a little bit. Great, three people are outside of the Netherlands, or five, very good, okay. So wherever you're from, welcome. And what I want to talk about first is some of the goals of public procurement. So you're not undergraduate students, you're mostly professionals in public procurement, or you've studied it for quite a while. So I'm not starting from the beginning, which is really good. So I'll just overview what the purpose is. Who is purchasing innovation? And who is purchasing green, so green public procurements? But to determine that, you also have to determine what makes a tender green. And I have a more interactive exercise for you where you can guess based on the knowledge you have, some of the results. And then talk about some of the implications in the next steps. So the instruments and the different aspects you can incorporate to try to promote more green public procurements in your organization and together with other organizations. So of course, public procurement is purchasing by public contracting authorities to meet user needs. It has an economic rationale, in part because it is such a high proportion of European GDP. So this 18% accounts to 3.4 trillion. And in the Netherlands, the Dutch government procures around 73 billion worth of work, services, and supplies every year. So if you can leverage this amount, if you can leverage the potential, you can really have a large impact on the market and environments and sustainability. But to do this, the government needs to act as an intelligent buyer, meaning you really have to understand your user needs, what's already on the market, how suppliers are concentrated, how they're acting, what sort of prior art there is. So you need all this sort of information to be able to really leverage public procurement as a mechanism. The benefit of doing this is that it's a demand pull measure. So you can have innovation that's either technology push or demand pull. And technology push is when suppliers innovate and then they put it onto the market and they see what's going to happen. And demand pull is when you set the need and you have suppliers working toward meeting that need. So it's more strategic and it's more effective. And it's also more efficient in terms of time and money you need to spend to get the right functionality in the solution. So there's a couple goals of public procurements. The ones you're probably aware of are the primary goals. So these are more administrative and obvious. So these are like service improvement and cost reduction. Then there's some of the secondary goals. So the ones I'm going to focus on are innovation and sustainability. And it's really these secondary goals we can use to leverage the procurement mechanism. But to take a step back, the research that we did within the last few months was motivated from a previous study. And this focused on innovation procurement. And this study asked the question of what types of contracting authorities across Europe are performing innovation procurements. And this is the reference if you want. It's called the Heterogeneity of Innovation Procurement Across Europe. And it's in the Journal of Public Procurements. And I took this paper to the International Public Procurement Conference in Bali in 2016, and it won an award. So it's nice that the world is interested in Europe for innovation procurements. They look to Europe to learn from. And particularly because the Netherlands is really excelling within Europe, this is a nice opportunity to be able to do another study, but also come together with all of you experts. So the study on innovation procurement found three different types of contracting authorities. and maybe you recognize yourself in some of these types. So the first type was about half of the, 50% of the population. And these were user-focused direct procurers. So direct procurement, meaning they purchased something that they needed for their own use. So they were the own users of themselves. They were usually small procurement sizes. They were also very municipal. Countries that are popular in this cluster were Germany and Poland. And they tended to talk to other users and procurers when they were planning for these procurements. So the second type was a bit different. These are large and national level procurers. The tenders were for a higher value. They were also very collaborative. They conducted public procurement of innovation more. So this means that they did incremental adaptation and modification of solutions that already existed on the market. They used a lot of different information sources, and some examples of countries here are Spain and the UK. And then the last cluster of contracting authorities, these were focused on suppliers, and they tended to do more pre-commercial procurement. So this is contracting for research and development services all the way up through the conceptual stage to testing to prototyping, and then finally before the point of commercialization. So this was more for catalytic procurement, so where procurers bought on behalf of another end user. So for example, citizens in a municipality, and they were more likely to be regional level associations, organizations. And an example country for this was Italy. So this research, there's a few drawbacks from it that made us want to kind of study more. So this data was quite old. So it's from 2008 to 2012. And we want to really study what's happening first under the updated procurement directives. Of course, these were in 2014. And we also wanted to understand, how is sustainability going across Europe through green public procurement? So that leads us to the question we had, which is what types of contracting authorities within Europe are performing green public procurements? We had an open data set, which was a good benefit of this study. So we used the EU TenderNEDS or EU TED. This also allowed us to have wide multi-country coverage. And I had a motivated master's student who's probably in the chat somewhere. So Milan Jens was working on this for 8 months of his life last year, and he did a very good job. So all those led to a really interesting preliminary study results, at least. We're focusing on green public procurements, and the definition of this you're probably aware of. So it's purchasing that reduces the environmental impacts across product or service life cycles of whatever is procured. This uses kind of the replace product approach. So this is in comparison to the product or service that would have been purchased without green public procurement. So you can identify the environmental benefit of green public procurement by comparing it with what would have been procured otherwise if the method wasn't used. And it focuses only on the environmental pillar of sustainability. So you often also hear about sustainable public procurements. That encompasses the social, economic, and environmental elements. Green public procurement only focuses on the environmental aspects. And we did that to also control, to increase the quality of the results that we could get. And also it was difficult enough to identify what was green within our database. So we just focused on this for now. The way it impacts innovation and sustainability in the market is it rewards the sustainability front runners, which means that it's identifies the potential solutions or those with the greatest ability to maybe be competitive and flourish in the markets, and it picks those and it procures those with a really large amount of purchase. So because these purchases are so large, a green public procurement can directly impact the market share of leading sustainable solutions. And then it also has indirect effects. So this is why it's more complex to study, more complicated than it might sound just upfront. Because by doing so, you can create ripple effects in the market, but you can also signal future intentions to the market and saying, this is where the procurement is going in the future. This is where we're moving toward, and this is what we value as contracting authorities and as governments with regard to sustainability. So keep in mind that innovation procurements and green public procurement are not exclusive things. They can be parts and one of another. So that's why I'm also discussing it within the context of this workshop today. This means that a procurement could both reduce environmental impacts and also results in an innovative step. And this innovative step could be either incremental, like a small innovative step, like through public procurement of innovation, or it could be a large innovative step, like through radical innovation or pre-commercial procurement. Okay, so because we're talking about the usefulness of case studies and how we can learn from best practices, I want to start now with an example of a green public procurement. And this example is in Norway. So in 2010, the Norwegian Ministry of Transport launched a competition for a car ferry, so a ferry to transfer cars across the water, with a number of criteria. And these are what we can refer to as green public procurement award criteria. The ministry was motivated by the end of life of the current fleets. I think these were diesel powered vehicles that they had. And they also had the end of the contract with current suppliers. So in combination with the desire to be more sustainable and the actual physical need for new products, they decided to do this green public procurement. So the criteria were based on a price and quality distribution. So 60% on price, but also quite a bit on quality, 40%. And this quality criteria had a number of aspects that related to sustainability. So one of them was the energy use for the passenger car per year, per kilometer, and with an 18% weighting within that 40%. Next was the total energy use per year that the solution would provide. The tons of carbon dioxide equivalent per year that would be, emitted by the solution, and the kilograms of NOx also emitted per year from whatever solution. They also valued innovation as particularly 6% in this, to be more specific about how they thought about innovative ideas. You have to go look to the case, but it was very interesting that they included this particularly as an award criteria. And then overall for the procurement, for the solution, they asked for a minimum of 15 to 20% improvement in energy efficiency and compared to the existing diesel powered ferry. So they used the what was currently implemented as a baseline for comparison and as a motivator for suppliers to innovate and improve upon the sustainability aspects. What was a success? It was a few years ago, but this was in the world, the first electric ferry, which was called Ampura. And it was such a success that they opened tenders to do a second electric ferry. And they also created a new tender for some ferry, which was of unspecified power source. But they say it could run on biogas, biofuel, electricity, as long as it had to be zero or low carbon emissions. Now that we saw an example of green public procurements, what are some of the instruments you can use to produce a green public procurement and have environmental benefits? These are particularly covered in the directive 2014-24, but they're also equally applicable to those in the water, energy and transport directives and the defense and security directives. So you can put award criteria, you can use environmental criteria in defining technical specifications. You can use eco labels for calculating or communicating life cycle assessment impacts. You can conduct a life cycle assessment as well, depending on the product category. You can use life cycle costing to calculate the cost of the product or service over the whole lifespan, not just the point of use of the contracting authority. And you can also use innovation partnerships. Market consultation is also another important instrument. And in all of these, you can discuss award criteria. So for the electric ferry example, this is what it was showing. So it's a distribution between price and quality. It produces a ratio. That means the procurement is not just on lowest price or price alone. And if a contracting authority implements this approach, award criteria in a tender, then it promotes suppliers to not only compete on margins, they begin to compete on environmental aspects and sustainability and innovation. So this is why it's important. For most of the green public procurement criteria published in the European Union, so there's guidelines for 21 different product categories, and these are also translated into national action plans. So the Netherlands has its own national action plan, which is just updated, I think, in July of 2021. So go take a look. It's quite interesting to read. And it also has some benchmarking there. But the green public procurement criteria is usually based on eco-label use and life cycle assessment. So helping contracting authorities to calculate the emissions intensity or some sort of factor intensity of a particular product or product category, and then communicating that through the use of eco-labels to the public or to various buyers. Okay, so the current study, we wanted to know what types of contracting authorities within Europe are procuring green public procurement. So really, who is using green award criteria within their tenders? How does this compare across countries? And how can we see what other factors are associated with the use of green award criteria? This was output-oriented research. So to put my academic hat on for a second, this means we're studying what happened. So what happened is actually seeing the green tenders that are published over the threshold for the European threshold. This is the dependent variable. And we use this to go back and study why did it happen. So to understand inputs, which are independent variables, and these can be processes, instruments, tools, or policies. An overview of the study, we looked at the TED database and contract notices, so not contract award notices, because those aren't very reliable. We used the 6-year timeline, so 2014 to 2019. So this was well within when the new directives were in play for innovation procurement. And the method was the quantitative regression analysis. Since I don't think there are many economists here and I don't want to go into it too much, I won't, but I'll give you the overview, which I think is more interesting for this type of discussion and panel today. Okay, so some of the variables we looked at, so some of those inputs, independent variables to see what causes green tenders to happen. The most important was the type of contracting authority. Next was the main activity of the contracting authority. And this was more of the general area of the markets in which they were active, in which they were procuring. Next, the business sector of the procurement. This is based on the CPV code. And we focused on those business sectors which were targeted by green public procurement policies. Next, the procedure type, whether or not it was a joint procurement. Because we did suspect that joint procurement particularly was useful for green public procurement to help supplement the knowledge and the skills of other actors in buyers group or other contracting authorities who didn't have the know-how yet to do that. So joint procurement is a good way to connect different parties to lead to more green tenders. We also looked at contract value. So the size of the procurement based on the euro amount it was for. And then the country. So it was for 8 different countries. This was due to language barriers or language opportunities because Milan spoke, I think, 5 of these languages or something. So thank you, Milan. Doing a broader study was not possible just because there's so much data to work through and it's so intensive to go through. So this sample represented at least 29% of the tenders of the member states. So we can have some sort of representation when we talk about European wide for this study. And how we broke down the subsets of tenders. So you have all of the tenders in the EU from 2014 to 2019 over that 6-year period. And then we took a subset of those 3.9 million tenders. And these were tenders from just those 8 countries we're focusing on. This was about 1/4 of the tenders. And then of those, we also took a subset again. And these were the tenders with only green award criteria. So we had to go through first and identify, did they use meet criteria or price only? So is it one or the other in the checkboxes or the dropdown the procurers have to fill in when they're doing a tender? And then after that, if they did use meet criteria, what sort of quality criteria was there? And this required going through many different keywords and building a list of keywords and separating those tenders out that were actually green public procurements. We ended up with a sample of 36,000 tenders. And we use this kind of as a nesting sample, sample A, B, and C. And sample C was used for a variable to put in for green public procurement for sample B. Okay, so some of the results, I won't tell you, but I'm going to have to get you to guess first. So can you please go back to the Menti page? You can use the same page you were on before, I believe. You can also scan the QR code that's here again. If you came in a little later. Okay, so my question, the first one for you is, in 2009, what awarding method was used the most in all types of public procurements across Europe? Do you think it was the lowest price? Was it meat? Or was it an equal split between lowest price and meat? So I'll give you a few seconds to answer.
Just checking, you said 2009, but the slide says
2019.
Okay, good. Because that might make a difference here.
Yeah. No, it wasn't a trick, sorry. Okay, so the most are going for meats. Okay, but you're still a lot think it might be lowest price still. That's very interesting. Okay, 38 people, 50% response rate. That's pretty good. Oops, sorry. Okay, so it seems to be pretty stable in the sense that meat, you think meat is a little bit more common. Actually, in 2019, it was not. So 2019 saw the lowest price being the most common procurement method across all of the tenders in Europe. So in this graph, you can see lowest price is depicted by the red bar, whereas the meat criteria is the green bar. What is good is that overall, the number of tenders being published electronically is increasing, but the meat criteria is not so stable. But overall, the trend is positive. So, okay. Next question for you is, what country do you think has the highest proportion of green tenders? An Italian responded first, very good. Oh, sorry. Okay, a lot for the Netherlands, very national, good. Some for Germany. And by proportion here, I don't mean the total amounts. I mean the representation of green tenders of all the tenders of all the countries. Good. Okay, so we have a lot of faith in the Netherlands. This is very good. Yeah, Germany as well. Okay, so if you look at these results, they're quite stable. This is what would come out. I won't make that point because that study is not done yet. But it's a bit counterintuitive. So France actually has the highest proportion of green tenders compared to all the tenders that they do, which was a bit surprising. The Netherlands came next. And Germany has about equal proportion of green tenders to what it procures normally as represented within the EU. And those which are less represented proportionally are actually the United Kingdom and Italy. So this is what we were looking at with the samples B and the C together before. Okay. Sorry. Okay, and then we'll do one more question here and then I'll go back to the presentation. So my question to you now is, which product categories do you think are most likely to be procured using green public procurements? So you can rank them in the order that you think they're more or less likely to be procured in. So we have the sectors or product categories of food, medical equipment, transport, furniture, and construction. Okay, so transport is pretty stable at the top here. Furniture is, okay, food is moving up. Yeah, construction you think is doing pretty well. Okay, so we're pretty stable now. Actually, it's somewhat right. Food is the number one product that's procured using green public procurements. So it's really one of the categories that we can learn from to see what they're doing right and how applicable this can be to other sectors. Next likely one is actually the furniture sector. And medical equipment is, the mid-study. So it's the largest group that we compared everything else to. So medical equipment was ranked third in this list. And then actually transport and construction were a little bit later on the likelihood. Okay, so I think in the essence of time, I will go back to the presentation now. And one second. Okay, so this gives a bit of the summary of the findings. Like I was mentioning, the factors associated with green public procurements, institutional speaking, national or federal authorities are more likely, whereas regional or local authorities are actually much less likely to conduct green public procurements. And this is in contrast to the study on innovation procurements, where they were more likely to procure, at least pre-commercial procurements. So the next step in this is to actually compare two studies and see what the results might mean in contrast to each other. Competitive dialogue was more likely to be associated with green public procurements as were open and restricted procedures. There weren't enough innovation partnerships in our sample to make any determination on them. But one thing we did find was negotiated procedures were much less likely to be associated with green public procurements. The food sector was more likely, as were furniture and environmental services, as was joint procurements and procurements with a larger value, so of a larger size. So going back to the work group, what is the goal of the working group? It's to bring purchasing and innovation closer together and to make use of the possibilities of instruments such as the SBIR and the innovation partnership. And the questions posed through the working group are, what are some appropriate target numbers to reach for? What are the bottlenecks, like we heard Floris mention earlier? And what solutions and best practices are there that we should implement to remove the bottlenecks? So there's a lot of instruments you can use, and also with respect to green public procurements. The instruments aren't just procedural, like innovation partnerships or the SBIR, but they relate to many different factors that influence the public procurement and the planning of the procurement. So think back to what would influence the different variables that we studied in this study. So first you have the procedural ones, and these are mostly based on the innovative step. So this is the pre-commercial procurements, the innovation procurements, and the innovation partnership. I think you're aware of those. And then you can also use standards as instruments. So these standards, instead of based on innovation per se, will be based on sustainability. And these are like the European Union Green Public Procurement criteria. And these are for 21 different product categories. The MVI criteria, which is kind of the translation of the Dutch from the European level to the national level. Other standards are the environmental cost indicator, so the MKI in the Netherlands. The CO2 prestatie ladder, eco labels, and life cycle costing. So you can think of all of these as instruments and standards that you can use to help understand the award criteria that you want to post to the markets and to help plan your procurements in a more informed and objective and quantified way. Where can you use these instruments? You can use them in framework agreements, like for pre-commercial procurements. You can use them, of course, in the tenders. So like we studied in the current study, these can go in the product specifications, so that like the technical specifications, or they can also go, of course, in the award criteria or the contract clauses. And the contract clauses are a very interesting place to study right now, because you can do a lot over the time span of the procurements. So instead of locking in a vendor or a buyer to one solution for a period of 4 years, a contract clause can ask the supplier to be more innovative and be more green and reduce the environmental impacts of the product or service they deliver over those 4 years. And then it can have requirements for, yeah, communicating that improvement back to the buyer, for example. Some other places they can be used are in category plans, of course. And those are, yeah, they're sectoral and based on the product category, as well as purchasing calendars. And purchasing calendars you can use to be more forward-looking and open and communicative to the market, so suppliers have an idea of what's coming up and what's important. And it's a very strategic way to plan for green public procurements, because it doesn't necessarily require any direct investment, but you can still help motivate and orient the markets in a particular direction with the purchasing calendars. You can also use organizational instruments. So joints or collaborative procurement is really important. Something with this working group, a question that's raised is to what extent can create these actual, yeah, on the ground practical initiatives. And I think this is a really good opportunity to do so. You can look at consortium or buyers groups and the conditions surrounding the responsibilities and obligations of different members of the buyers group. You can look at partnerships, so public-private partnerships like the innovation partnership, or you can look to the relationship with the supplier. So having a parallel competition with suppliers, such as in pre-commercial procurement. The last type of instruments I'm going to talk about are some guidance instruments. And when I was looking these up, they're actually very useful, particularly the MVI Loket. So thanks, Piano. I was doing some research on this. You can also look to the EAFIP Innovation Procurement Toolkit, the EU GPP Buying Green Toolkit, or the NEVI web tool that they just came out with the ISO standard for sustainable public procurements, I believe. So these are some very practical, useful tools that have also been translated and literally translated to Dutch, which will help national or lower level contracting authorities. Okay, so some food for thoughts. What can you take away from this? Green public procurement is an instrument in itself for innovation procurement. So don't think about them separately, but think about how they can be intertwined and how you can meet both of those secondary goals of innovation and sustainability when you're thinking about innovation procurement. And regarding the results of our study, what is it actually that makes national authorities, the food sector, supplies, or joint procurements more likely to be green? So what are the factors contributing to their success in green public procurements? And once you know those factors and those instruments, how can you use that knowledge to actually promote green public procurements in the areas that are lagging behind? And you can take a targeted and a more policy-oriented approach, like Floris was recommending, how to inform policy with respect to different contracting authorities, different sectors, and different procedure types. Because the more targeted you are, the more effective it will be in removing those bottlenecks that you have for reaching green public procurement goals. And the question I leave this to you is, actually, what does it mean for you personally in whatever role you have with respect to innovation procurement or green public procurement? And then what does it mean for your organization too? So think about the different boundaries that you have to work within and across in accomplishing goals for green public procurement. So I hope you enjoyed this presentation. Thank you for the opportunity. And yeah, I'm open for any question or comments you want to write in the chat or email to me independently. Thank you for your attention.